Thank you very much for standing by, and welcome to today's NCAA Committee on Infractions press conference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session with instructions given at that time. If you require any assistance during today's call, press star then zero on your phone keypad. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and I would now like to turn the conference over to our host today, Ms. Emily Potter with the NCAA. And please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Dave. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding Mississippi State University. Apologize for the technical difficulty that some of you may experience that when you tried to dial in the first time. Members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and public report, which contains details of this case. Information can also be found at NCAA.org. Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across the NCAA membership and public. The members of the Committee on Infractions who reviewed this case include Britton Banowski, Chair of Committee on Infractions and Commissioner of Conference USA, Greg Christopher, Athletics Director, Xavier University, Melissa Convoy, Vice Chair of the Committee on Infractions and Deputy Director of Athletics, the University of Notre Dame, Christopher Griffin, Coordinator of Appeals and Attorney, Brian Halloran, Attorney, Roscoe Howard, Jr., Attorney, James O'Fallon, Law Professor and Faculty Athletics Representative, the University of Oregon. Committee on Infractions Chair Britton Banowski will now discuss the findings and decisions of the Infractions Committee. Following his opening comments, he will take questions. Britton.
Thank you, Emily, and good morning, everyone. I know most of you have just received it, but the report details the findings and penalties in this case. My comments are designed simply to help address any questions you might have, and it's important, I think, that the report stands on its own merits. And I think, you know, most, if not all, of your questions can be answered by a reading of the report. At the outset, I'll note that the university and the former assistant football coach involved in this case substantially agreed with the allegations in the case. The case is narrow in scope and very straightforward. There's no dispute on the facts of the case or that major violations occurred. It's a serious case because it involves an alum and booster heavily engaged in the recruitment of a star recruit and a coach who was aware of it, didn't discourage it, didn't report it, and wasn't honest when asked about it. The booster befriended the recruit and began arranging for him to use cars, providing him with cash and other benefits. During the recruitment, the booster exchanged more than 100 phone calls with the recruit, assisted the recruit in securing a car to drive to a campus visit, and provided cash to the recruit on multiple occasions. Additionally, the booster and his friend provided a car to the recruit for approximately $2,000 below the actual value of the car. Prior to taking an official visit to a different university, the booster told the recruit that if he did not take the visit, the recruit would be paid $6,000. The former assistant coach at the university, who had developed a friendship with the booster, became aware of the improper recruiting activity. But as I said, did nothing to discourage it and didn't report it to university officials. When asked in two initial interviews with the university and the NCAA, the former assistant coach denied any knowledge of the booster's activity. And after he resigned his position, the former assistant coach admitted he was, in fact, aware of the activity. Because of this, the coach was charged with unethical conduct. I think the committee would like me to express appreciation for the cooperation from the parties in the case. The university did a great job of investigating and presenting the case to the committee. And the former assistant coach, who was no longer employed at the university or any NCAA member school, was really not required to attend the infractions committee, but did so anyway, in order to take responsibility for his actions. And I think that helped the committee get a full assessment of the violations. And that, I think, also was good for us in in terms of understanding the credibility of this former assistant coach and where he is from a going forward basis. Regarding the penalties, the full list can be found in the public report. Again, it should be noted that almost all of the penalties in the case were self-imposed by the university. They include public reprimand and censure, 2 years of probation from June 7, 2013 through June 6, 2015, a one-year show cause order for the former assistant coach, which prevents him from recruiting activities and booster interaction. Again, the public report contains further details of that. There'll be a reduction in the number of official visits to 39 from the four-year average of 41 for the 2012-13 and 2013-14 academic years. A reduction of the number of recruiting days during the spring evaluation period by four from 168 to 164 for the 2012-13 academic year. A reduction in the number of total scholarships by two. From 85 to 83 for the 2012-13 academic year, a reduction in the number of initial and total scholarships by two, from 25 to 23 and 85 to 83, respectively, for the 2013-14 academic year, and for the first two conference contests of the 2013 season, complimentary admissions to football recruits on unofficial visits will be prohibited. Disassociation of the booster by the university's athletics program also occurred and is incorporated herein as a corrective action. Finally, I'd just like to say this is a classic case where a booster inserts himself into the recruiting process in an effort to help his school land the prize recruit. So they'll be better positioned to win more games. That's always a problem. When the school, through its employee, has knowledge of it and doesn't act, it becomes a more serious problem, obviously. This concludes my opening remarks, and I'll turn it back to you, Emily.
Operator, can you please explain how reporters can indicate they would like to ask a question?
Well, certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, to queue up for a question, press star and then one on your phone keypad. You will hear a tone indicating you've been placed into that queue, and if you'd like, you may remove yourself from that queue by pressing the pound key. So once again, if you'd like to queue up and ask a question, please press star, then one at this time. And one moment, please, for our first question. All right, thank you. We'll take a question from the line of Brad Locke with the Daily Journal. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I was just curious as to the eligibility of the student-athlete in question for the coming season and if any eligibility affected last year.
I believe all the eligibility issues in the case have been resolved.
Thank you, Mr. Locke. Anything further?
Well, so that means he's eligible this fall?
I believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if there are any further questions, please press star then one at this time.
Seeing no questions, thank you again for joining us today. Oh, we just had one pop up.
Yes. We'll take a question from the line of David Murray with Dog Bite Magazine. Please go ahead.
Yes, Commissioner Murkowski, could you please comment again on the university's response and the fact that how they submitted these self-assessed penalties and their cooperation in this?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the university did a great job of, once they became aware of the problem, investigating it, looking internally at various self-imposed sanctions and penalties, and then when we got to the hearing, they obviously cooperated well with the NCAA enforcement staff in presenting the case. And so, you know, I wanted to go out of our way to let folks know we were very appreciative of the way the university responded, and that's the way that it should be in cases like these.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will next go to the line of John Palti with the Clarion Ledger. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. I've only had a chance to really just skim the report, so this might be addressed in it. But I was interested in how much of a role a 7-on-7 coach, Byron DeVinner, played in this. And specifically, he had said to me that he had audio tapes of alleged recruiting improprieties and that he had passed those tapes along to the NCAA. So I wanted to know if that was accurate and what kind of role they played in the investigation.
Well, I can only tell you what was presented to us in the hearing, and there was clear indication that the booster in this case was providing benefits to a non-scholastic coach, and it's kind of contained in the report. If you look at page 4, you'll kind of see you'll see how that is outlined, and I don't think we have any information relative to the tapes or anything like that. If so, it would be probably something you need to ask the NCAA enforcement staff about.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, we will hear from the line of David Brandt with the Associated Press. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I was just wondering, like John, Fred just had a chance to skim the report, but, how much or the culpability of head coach Dan Mullen. Did you think he cooperated fully with this, that he was unaware that it was truly an isolated case? Just, did you think he had any involvement in it?
The committee really wasn't presented any evidence at all that either the head coach was aware of what was going on, or the university for that matter, other than vicariously through the employee that was the former assistant coach. So we didn't have any information to suggest that that was the case.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, we will hear from the line of Matthew Stevens with Commercial Dispatch. Go ahead, please.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask if you could roll us through a timeline of how the investigation took place and when the interviews took place, and kind of just roll us through maybe months as to when the first interviews were taking place with the coach and then with the student-athlete directly involved.
I probably can't do that with you here. I'd encourage you to read the report, and then if you have more detailed questions about timeline and those kinds of things, I'd kind of direct you back to Emily Potter at the NCAA, and she could probably help you.
All right, thank you. And if there are any further questions, please press star then one at this time. All right, thank you. And we will hear from the line of George Schroeder with USA Today. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. I wonder, it's a one-year show cause order. Can you talk about why you guys decided 1 year was the right amount and why you decided a show cause order was something you wanted to do in the first place to be a former assistant?
Well, it's a serious case because it involved an allegation of unethical conduct against the coach, and virtually every case like that, the result is some sort of show cause penalty. I think the committee was persuaded by the appearance of the former assistant coach. He wasn't required to show up, but he showed up. He paid his own way and was very, very forthright in the hearing. He took responsibility for his actions, and I think that went a long way towards mitigating the severity of the penalty.
Okay. Thank you.
You. Next, we will go to the line of Mike Donner with the Clarion Ledger. Go ahead, please.
Yes, as I said, I haven't gotten to look at the full report yet, but could you talk about how Mississippi State handled itself maybe before the investigation and how that helped them maybe after with the penalties and such?
Well, it was clear, when we received the case, and you got to keep in mind that the Committee on Attractions doesn't investigate these cases. We're a separate body that's simply responsive to the membership in hearing the cases and finding facts and assessing penalties. So we're not privy to all the details of the investigation. It's basically what is presented by the parties in the hearing and through the record of the hearing. But I think Mississippi State did a great job of, once made aware of a problem, stepping up and doing a thorough investigation, trying to get to the bottom of it, taking the necessary action once they found, the scope and severity of the problem, and then owning up to it when they got to the hearing. So I think, they did a great job, and I'm sure that was reflected in the nature of the penalties and the fact that the committee virtually accepted all of their self-imposed penalties.
All right. Thank you. And no further questions in queue.
Thank you for joining us again today. This concludes our comments. A recording of this teleconference will be available in the near future on the NCA website at nca.org.
All right. Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference today. We appreciate your participation and your using AT&T Executive Teleconference, and you may now disconnect.